We're getting up to speed on how we can use more nutrient-dense ingredients in our recipes this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The test cooks at America's Test Kitchen have compiled a list of 50 high-nutrient superfoods that include winners from fruits, vegetables, legumes, grains, and proteins. Jack Bishop is here to talk about the recipes. He's chief creative officer at America's Test Kitchen. Its newest cookbook out is called Nutritious Delicious. Turbocharge your favorite recipes with 50 everyday superfoods. Jack, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kate. How are you?
I'm doing well. So for many, there's a sense that you have to choose between cooking healthier and eating what you really desire, what you really want and crave, that we give up indulging when we eat healthy. What do you make of that notion?
Yeah, I think it's really a flawed concept, and I think it explains why a lot of New Year's resolutions fail, because people think that a healthy diet is all about eliminating the foods that you like. And so it's boring and it's hard. And so people last 2 days, a week, maybe they last a month, and then that New Year's resolution is gone. And so what we did with this brand new book, Nutritious Delicious, is say, let's keep the foods we love, but let's make them much more nutritious, pack them with nutrients. Worried a little bit less about calories and fat, and really just creating vibrant, beautiful food that is good for you, and that, of course, tastes great. And as you said, we started out by thinking, well, what are these superfoods that are just packed with vitamins and fiber and minerals that we should be eating more of? And so it was a really fun project for us in the Test Kitchen to develop these recipes.
Well, without further ado, let's start talking about what these superfoods are and what we can put into our grocery cart as we think about the recipes we use every day.
Yeah, so the first thing we did is there are some superfoods out there, and so there's a lot of literature out there. We spoke with, worked with nutritionists and research scientists, and there's certain ingredients that what I would call pantry items that might be like spices. That might be rich in nutrients, but, you know, can you really eat turmeric for dinner?
No.
So we said, let's pick 50 foods that could actually be the main ingredient in a recipe. And so fruits, vegetables, proteins, so things like yogurt, trout, salmon, mushrooms, cauliflower, blueberries. I mean, things that you could actually, okay, you can build a recipe around rather than things like ginger or turmeric, which are important spices that we use throughout the book. But really, it's hard to build a dish around those ingredients.
What strikes me about this cookbook when I look at it and read it are the amount of color I see. There is so much color in this food. Natural color, of course, because but is that something that are these colorful fruits and vegetables can really also play into the nutrients?
It's true, yes. And it's, you know, it's partly eating the rainbow, which is sounds like, oh, some kind of marketing slogan, but it's actually a good way to think about the world of fruits and vegetables. In order to really maximize the diversity of nutrients that you're getting, you really want to eat a food that's a variety of colors. I mean, we all know that leafy greens are great for us, but they do not have all of the nutrients that we need. And so, for instance, for vitamin A, you really want to be eating butternut squash. Or things that are, or carrots. And so that diversity of ingredients in terms of their color does signal that you're eating a healthier diet. And the food is beautiful throughout this book. I mean, every single recipe has a photograph. And we said, well, we need to photograph every recipe because they're all so beautiful and so attractive and so appealing. And, you know, we do eat with our eyes. And so really bright, vibrant recipes that smell great and look great, you know, they end up tasting even better.
And we're still in the thick of the holiday season here, where we're entertaining and there's lots of cookies, fudge, and other treats on the table. But as we eat with our eyes, as you say, are there things we can do as we prepare for New Year's Eve festivities and for family dinners here? Do you have any suggestions for how they can be prepared more nutritious for family and friends as they come over?
Yeah, I mean, I think the holidays are the holidays. And so I know, at least in my family, if there's certain things that aren't on the table, there will be trouble at the dining room table. Let's just put it that way. I have a very vocal crowd. And so for the holidays, my strategy is really more around putting additional choices on the table so that I'm not necessarily tinkering with that favorite recipe that my children have known for two decades and honestly are expecting it to be exactly the way it is, but thinking, are there other healthy choices? So, for instance, Christmas morning in my house, we do these incredible over-the-top cinnamon buns. But I made a gorgeous fruit salad that had kiwi and blackberries and mango that was put on the table alongside the decadent cinnamon buns with the hope that everyone would partake of some of the healthy option as well. And, you know, I purposely chose fruits that were beautiful together. Part of getting people to eat healthy food is to think about how colors and textures work together. And I got to tell you, a blackberry, kiwi, and mango fruit salad, simply dressed. I didn't put any sugar on it. I just let the fruit speak for itself. Isn't it sort of kind of strategy that I think that's actually the most effective, rather than trying to turn a cinnamon bun into somehow or other a healthy recipe, which seems like a
that's a pretty tall task, right?
Yeah, I mean, where are you going to start? The butter, the sugar, the cream cheese?
How's your magic with applesauce these days, right?
Exactly.
So how do you make color and texture work together in these nutrient-dense recipes?
Well, I think, you know, it's really thinking about constructing a story on the plate that engages people. One of my favorite recipes in this book is a black rice bowl. So black rice is an ancient Chinese grain. You can now get it in most supermarkets. And it is actually kind of a blackish purple. It has anthocyanins, the same compounds that are in blueberries that make blueberries so healthy. And it also has more protein and fiber and iron than other rice varieties. And so it creates this incredibly beautiful background for a Japanese-style rice bowl with a piece of roasted salmon. And then thinking about texture and color, creamy avocado, crisp radishes, a little bit of toasted nori, you know, the wrapper that's used around sushi. You can also just toast it and crumble it, and almost it's almost the Japanese equivalent of breadcrumbs, think of it that way, or Parmesan that you can sprinkle over dishes. And so you get these incredible colors, flavors, all in a beautiful bowl, and it is just an amazing recipe.
We're talking right now with Jack Bishop. He is America's Test Kitchen's Chief Creative Officer. The new cookbook is out of the Test Kitchen, Nutritious, Delicious. Turbocharge your favorite recipes with 50 everyday superfoods. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. How are you planning to eat healthier in the new year? What's your strategy to incorporate better ingredients? What healthy food surprised you with its deliciousness? Have you tried something new recently? Join in with your questions as well, 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jack, let's rewind to breakfast time. How can we turbocharge things like staples like pancakes, for example?
Well, first thing is that when you're doing baking, and whether this is breakfast baking or desserts, is to be thinking about using whole grains. And so, you know, whether that's whole wheat or to use oats, I love both. We've got recipes for both styles of pancakes. A whole wheat pancake that is just a, you know, a classic pancake with a little bit of sugar, a modest amount, buttermilk, which just makes the world's best pancakes, replacing the butter with some canola oil, which is a little bit more heart healthy and still has the eggs in it. And, you know, rather than maybe drowning it in just some syrup, adding some fresh fruit. Add some bananas, sliced bananas, add some sliced strawberries. For oats, we make this incredible blueberry oat pancake. So we're using oat flour. Again, this is an ingredient that may not have been widely available, but it's in the supermarket. You can also grind old-fashioned oats in the food processor to make your own oat flour. And it's just got, you know, it's got all the wonderful benefits of oats, and it's taking the place of almost all of the all-purpose flour. So rather than 2 cups of all-purpose flour, you're using a half a cup of white flour and then 1.5 cups of the oat flour, which has just got all of that great oat goodness in it. And then from there, it's a pretty standard pancake recipe that has blueberries in it for extra nutrition. Again, buttermilk, which just makes them fluffiest, lightest, most tender pancakes. And then some spices, a little bit of nutmeg and some cinnamon. And it's just really appealing, familiar. You know, it reads like a pancake, just a little bit more delicious. And it is also more nutritious than your regular pancake.
For many people, bacon is always a staple. Breakfast meat, sausage as well, ranks up there for breakfast meat. For obvious reasons, bacon is not included as a superfood. What can we use to achieve that smokiness flavor in food without using that meat?
Yeah, and I got to say, on the breakfast table, you know, this is a hard one. Bacon is bacon, and there isn't really much of a replacement. But if you think about in sandwiches, for instance, in a BLT or in other recipes where the bacon is a component rather than standing alone by itself, we use a lot of mushrooms. So you think about what bacon brings to a BLT, for instance. It's adding the meatiness. It's adding some smokiness. And so, you know, mushrooms have the same compound, umami, that is why we love meat. It makes things taste savory. And then we cook it, the mushrooms often, with something a little smoky. We love smoked paprika in the test kitchen. It's a Spanish spice that is actually, as it sounds, got a smoky flavor that, you know, again, you're not going to fool anybody and thinking, oh, I'm eating bacon. But it's thinking about what's the role of the bacon or whatever that ingredient is in that recipe. And if you take portobello mushrooms and you slice them into nice half-inch thick strips and you saute them with some shallots and you get them really brown to develop their flavor, you add some garlic and some smoked paprika, you've got just this amazing component that you can then layer into a recipe with tomato, using some arugula instead of the lettuce, adding, rather than mayonnaise, using a yogurt avocado spread. And it's an amazing sandwich. Now, no one is going to say, oh, you know, it's exactly like a BLT, but it has the textures and flavors that we crave. It's the thing that we love about a BLT, for instance.
You also put the spice cabinet to work in this cookbook. Do you see us underdoing the spices we use in our cooking?
I think so. You know, and I think people think spice and they think spicy, hot. And, you know, I think sometimes I understand that a lot of people, especially some people's palates are very sensitive, that tons of hot red pepper flakes maybe just makes a dish overwhelming. But I think all of those warm spices that are used throughout North Africa, the Eastern Mediterranean, cumin, cinnamon, turmeric, ground ginger, these really can make food taste delicious. You know, I think Indian food is being often has lots of spices, but isn't necessarily spicy. It can be spicy, but it's not always spicy because they're using all these warm spices that just happen to be packed with nutrients as well.
We're trying to stay on track with healthy eating habits in 2018, learning about 50 supercharged foods that we can easily find in the grocery store and incorporate into our cooking. Jack Bishop is with us. He's Chief Creative Officer at America's Test Kitchen. The test cooks there have a new cookbook out. It's called Nutritious Delicious. Turbocharge your favorite recipes with 50 everyday superfoods. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What question do you have about developing new food habits? 800-642-1234. We'll return for more from America's Test Kitchen in just a moment. America's Test Kitchen is out with a new cookbook. It's called Nutritious Delicious. Turbocharge your favorite recipes with 50 everyday superfoods. We're learning about these superfoods this hour and how to use them in recipes here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Jack Bishop is our guide. He's Chief Creative Officer at America's Test Kitchen. Gathering your thoughts on healthy eating as well at 800-642-1234. What ingredient do you want to try, but you're apprehensive to do so? Maybe you've seen it at the store, but perhaps it's a bit intimidating. Or do you have a favorite family recipe that you love that isn't very healthy, trying to change it up a bit? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Chris, who joins us from Adams. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning, Jack. I love you people. I have celiac disease, and so I've been on this lifelong trek to try and undo the mess that was made of my digestive system as a child, and I've gotten pretty out there in terms of really investigating anti-inflammatory foods. And you've already mentioned most of the spices and things that I would suggest to people, but I would like to add fennel and mustard seed and capsicum, hot red pepper, to the list of spices. And then in terms of herbs, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, which are also medicinal also. But there are a couple other foods that you didn't talk about. One is horseradish, which is also really good for you. Fresh pineapple. And people can undo their digestive systems if they just do that. And the other thing that you mentioned that I disagree with vehemently is that you shouldn't eat the processed oils. I use organic coconut oil for my cooking and then organic olive oil for my salad dressings and stuff. And people who have arthritic conditions...
Oh, Chris, and you're breaking up, but let's get Jack here to join in. Jack, go ahead with some of these suggestions for ingredients.
Yeah, I think Chris's suggestions sound great. Throughout the book, we're recommending that you use cold press extra virgin olive oil. And so, you know, that's olive oil that has been literally the fruit. You know, olives are really a fruit. They're just simply squeezing the juice, i.e. the oil from the fruit, rather than using heat or chemicals. In terms of canola oil, you know, we really feel like expeller pressed. Again, it's been minimally refined, processed without chemicals, rather than what would be called sort of traditional vegetable oils, which are very, very highly refined and have had a lot of their nutrients stripped out in the process. The other thing about canola oil, again, expeller-pressed or cold-pressed extra virgin olive oil, is they're both high in monounsaturated fats, which tend to be healthier fats for us when we're cooking.
Can we find these oils in our local grocery stores, or do we have to go to someplace special?
For olive oil, really what you're looking for is extra virgin, and mm-hmm. generally the words cold press will be on the label, mm-hmm. The high-quality extra virgin oils are all cold-pressed. By definition, cold-pressed means there's no heat, and same thing with extra virgin. They're not supposed to be using heat to treat the olives. Expeller-pressed, again, you're reading labels, but especially if you've got a supermarket with a decent natural food section, you're likely to see expeller-pressed canola oil.
You shared a recipe with us, and we've posted it on the Morning Show page at WPR.org. Could you walk us through how to make a super cob salad?
Sure. So we were talking earlier about bacon and thinking, well, if you're not going to be eating bacon, what's the role?
What's the replacement?
Bacon?
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, it's not, you know, I think this is not the let's use turkey bacon instead, which I don't really feel like. First of all, you read the ingredient list of what's in that, you're sure, and turkey may be better than, you know, in terms of less fat than pork. But then there's a lot of other things in there that are not terribly nutritious. And so this takes a different route and says, well, let's think about what is the role of the bacon in this recipe. And again, it's to provide something meaty, something savory, and something a little smoky. And so we're using mushrooms again. Here we're using shiitake mushrooms along with some chili powder and smoked paprika and sauteing them. You know, other things that we're doing in this recipe is that we're using kale. So rather than using iceberg lettuce, which isn't terribly nutrient dense, you know, the reason why iceberg lettuce is so crunchy is it's mostly water, which means there's not a lot of room for nutrients. So we're using kale, and we have this great trick of soaking kale in warm tap water in order to soften it. You soak it for about 10 minutes. Now, it's not hot water. It should be about 110 or 115 degrees, literally warm tap water. And it softens the kale, so it's not quite so tough. And then you can spin it dry. So basically, this is the step of washing it. You're just soaking it. And is a great way to sort of add more nutrition is by replacing the lettuce, which has got a lot of bulk in the salad, with kale. And then the blue cheese is the other sort of favorite ingredient that causes some problems. I mean, the tomatoes, the avocado, the chicken breast, those are the eggs, those all stay the same. And we sort of went back and forth on this and said, this really, you can't make a Cobb salad without blue cheese.
Oh, so much flavor there.
Right. It's providing tremendous amounts of flavor, but let's put that in a healthier dressing. And so let's add some yogurt as the base rather than a mayonnaise base. Let's use plain low-fat yogurt. We'll add a little bit of lemon juice for some tang and a little bit of garlic as well. And so we've got this really amazing dressing that, yes, it's got some blue cheese in it, but we're using less than you might. And by putting it in the dressing rather than sort of sprinkling it over the salad, we're getting that blue cheese flavor to sort of get into every nook and cranny in the salad bowl.
That's a different way to think of it, because then you spread that flavor all the way through the salad.
Yeah, and so the salad for six portions is using just 3 tablespoons of crumbled blue cheese, rather than, you know, you might see a recipe where you're sprinkling a half a cup of blue cheese over the entire salad, but you're really getting the impact of it because it's now bound into this creamy yogurt-based dressing. And you've got, you know, your hard-cooked eggs and your creamy avocado and your juicy tomatoes. And it's just a really lovely, as well as your chicken, a lovely salad for any time of the year.
I think that the thing that I learned from this cookbook is that it's not necessarily the goal to eliminate all the so-called bad ingredients. I know I was making a tuna salad last week and trying to make it for lunches for the week, and I tried to eliminate all the mayo and replace it with just plain Greek yogurt, and it wasn't the same. It just didn't have that same texture and rich flavor that I had been accustomed to. So are you still using some of these ingredients that we love in our favorite dishes and just tinkering a little from there?
Yeah, in some cases, you know, replacing a portion of that ingredient with something healthier is a much more successful strategy than just eliminating that ingredient. You know, again, thinking about what is that recipe, you know, what's that ingredient doing in the recipe? We have a macaroni and cheese that we sort of use 2 strategies. One, we added more nutritious ingredients. So we used whole wheat, elbow macaroni. We used whole wheat breadcrumbs. We added some Swiss chard. But we're still making a cheese sauce. I mean, you can't really make macaroni and cheese without a creamy, delicious cheese sauce. So we're using low-fat milk rather than half and half, so that the fat is really coming from the cheese. And then we're, you know, using really potent cheeses so that we can use less of that cheese. We're using Gruyere rather than, let's say, a Monterey Jack, which is fairly bland. Let's use a smaller amount of a more flavorful cheese to get you what it is that you want. And we're using low-fat milk, not skim milk. I mean, that's a good example in a lot of recipes where, you know, if you've got a recipe that has got whole milk in it, usually it'll be totally fine to use low-fat milk, and it doesn't work all that well if you just use skim milk in a lot of those recipes.
And by the way, we have this recipe up as well on the Morning Show page on WPR.org for this macaroni and cheese, this Swiss chard macaroni and cheese. You also have cream cheese in this macaroni and cheese. Is that to kind of give more of that creamy consistency?
Yeah, I mean, there's a sort of velvetiness to the sauce mm-hmm. in a macaroni and cheese that we weren't really getting. And the cream cheese, again, cream cheese is a lower fat cheese than the typical cheeses you'd be using this recipe, and gives us some of the sort of viscosity and the velvetiness. It's not really there. It's a little bit of tang, but it's not really there for flavor. It's really there for consistency and allows us to use just the amount of Gruyere we need for flavor, and then the cream cheese is doing the rest of the work in terms of texture.
Talking right now with Jack Bishop of America's Test Kitchen. He's chief creative officer there. The new cookbook is Nutritious, Delicious, Turbocharge Your Favorite Recipes with 50 Everyday Superfoods. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Did you used to hate a so-called health food, a superfood, and you've been won over or finally found a way to prepare it in a scrumptious way? How do you struggle with making healthy meals that everyone at the table enjoys? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Well, Jack, I know I have kids, and sometimes it's, you know, these flavors can get very complex very quickly. What would you suggest when kids are at the table to get these superfoods into their mouths?
Yeah, I mean, first, I have two now adult children, so, but I've been there. The first thing is persistence. You know, isn't that basically what parenting is all about? And when it comes to introducing foods, is to introduce them and don't expect it the first time that the child is going to love them. But keep on making the food and hoping that one little taste, the next time a bigger taste, and then the food will become more familiar and more accepted. So that's one strategy. The second is to really think about, you know, kids are just like us in the sense they're eating with their eyes, they're eating with their noses, and are you making the foods as appealing as you can? My favorite example of this is to think about how Brussels sprouts used to be prepared, which was they would be boiled to death,
mm-hmm.
and they would smell awful, and they wouldn't look very good, and nobody really wanted to eat Brussels sprouts. And I feel like Brussels sprouts, they have an amazing public relations person, because you now see Brussels sprouts on trendy menus all over the place. And
you see giant sacks of them at the grocery store. I mean, yeah. Big sacks.
And the big thing is that most, if you go into restaurants, they're mostly roasting them.
Mm-hmm.
Which we've got a recipe for roasted Brussels sprouts in the book. And it's just a much more appealing way of cooking this vegetable. Number one, you get some crispness around the edges if you just cut the sprouts in half, toss them with olive oil, throw them on a sheet pan, so you get some texture. You also don't get that sort of sulfurous smell that you actually, it's a chemical reaction that's triggered by the boiling. And so by roasting them, they also don't, they're not quite as stinky. And so your kids are going to be more likely to eat them. And so, you know, thinking about, am I preparing this in a way that maximizes its flavor and texture rather than somehow or other makes it a chore?
Growing up, we used to bathe those Brussels sprouts in butter. What are you coating your Brussels sprouts with? What's going with them?
Olive oil, salt, and pepper. And that's a simple, you know, if you want, you can dress them up and put some grated Parmesan on them, some chopped nuts, but honestly, just tossing them as is, with olive oil, salt, and pepper, and throwing them on a sheet pan in a hot oven for about 25 minutes, and they are transformed.
Mm, so really letting the flavor of the vegetable speak for itself.
Yeah, and you're also, think about it, when you're boiling a vegetable, you're cooking it, but you're not really developing any flavor. I mean, the only flavor that's occurring is perhaps if there's salt in the water, now you're seasoning the vegetables. Brown food tastes better. I mean, you think about, why do we like a grilled steak so much? It's because of the Maillard reaction, which is just a fancy term for what happens to food when it browns. And I got to say, vegetables in particular, I feel like almost every vegetable, broccoli, cauliflower, carrots, Brussels sprouts, benefits from being roasted because you're converting the starches in those vegetables to sugars. And they actually taste sweeter, the vegetables, when they're roasted. And so I think if you want your kids to eat more vegetables, you should be roasting your vegetables.
But are we cooking out the nutrients when we cook the vegetables?
You know, I've seen a lot of studies about, most nutritionists will say the most important thing is to eat the fresh vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, lightly cooking them probably does a better job. I mean, I've seen some studies say the microwave does the best job because you're not really using a lot of liquid. I mean, if you're boiling the vegetables or steaming them, you're also cooking up some of the nutrients. I'd be less concerned with that because they still have all of their fiber. They still have their iron and other nutrients. Some of the more heat-sensitive vitamins may be slightly diminished by cooking, but the reality is, I don't know about your children, but my children, they are not going to eat raw broccoli, even now that they're adults. That's a hard sell.
That's a hard sell.
If you roast it and then sprinkle it with some delicious flaked sea salt or a drizzle of olive oil, you can get your kids to eat broccoli.
We're not losing that much in the process of making it really taste great.
Yeah, and think, if they don't eat it, they get zero nutrition from it. So there's that to consider.
We're getting inspired by ingredients that can add tons of nutrients to our everyday meals. We're learning how to swap out more nutritious ingredients and pack in the supercharged foods with Jack Bishop. He's Chief Creative Officer over at America's Test Kitchen. They've put out a new cookbook. It's called Nutritious Delicious. Turbocharge your favorite recipes with 50 everyday superfoods. You can join in at 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. Did you used to hate a so-called health food and you finally found a way to prepare it in a really delicious way? Join us. Tell us about it. How do you struggle with making healthy meals that everyone enjoys? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return in just a moment. We're about to be inundated with diet fads here at the start of the new year. They'll start popping up on our news feed, landing in our email inboxes. We'll find them on all kinds of home pages. But this hour, we're learning about 50 nutrient-dense foods that can make our meals healthier and tastier. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Jack Bishop is America's Test Kitchen's Chief Creative Officer. America's Test Kitchen's newest cookbook is called Nutritious Delicious. Turbocharge your favorite recipes with 50 everyday superfoods. You can bring your ideas and questions, 800-642-1234. How are you planning to eat healthier in the new year? What's your strategy to incorporate better ingredients? What healthy food surprised you with its deliciousness? 800-642-1234. Pat emailed, said, I've got a great recipe for roasting Brussels sprouts that everybody loved over Christmas. Roast your Brussels sprouts with olive oil, salt, and pepper for 350 degrees for 30 minutes. Then drizzle balsamic vinegar mixed with 50-50 with sugar and added dried cherries or cranberries. It's really good. So what do you make of that, Jack?
That sounds delicious.
And how about adding dried cherries or cranberries?
Well, I think there are two things that are happening there, or really three. One is nutritious. You're getting, another color, another set of nutrients on the plate. Two, you're adding additional flavor. So, and third, it's a texture. So you're getting something chewy to contrast with the crisp, and then you're getting the red to highlight off of the green, and so it's attractive. And so you're making the dish better in lots of different ways, which is really the key to making an amazing tasting healthy recipe.
And some surprise when you put it in your mouth, a surprise to your palate. Is that helpful as well?
Yeah, I think we all want to be tasting new things. And so I think that combination sounds really, really appealing. You can imagine what that looks like in the bowl. And then you taste it and you get the chewy, dried fruit contrasting with the tender roasted cabbage, and which is, Brussels sprouts or baby cabbages. Sounds delicious to me.
Nuts and seeds are an excellent source of nutrition. What are some ways we can incorporate them or even make them the star of a dish?
Well, I think they are great as a sort of garnish.
Okay.
Think about at the table all of those things where you may sprinkle breadcrumbs or cheese over something. Nuts are really much more nutritious, and so we will often sprinkle toasted nuts. So toasting the nuts, meaning just heating them in a dry skillet until they're fragrant, brings out their flavor. And then chop them and sprinkle toasted walnuts, pecans, peanuts, pine nuts. You're adding some texture. You're adding additional flavor. We use a lot of nuts just as part of sauces. You can use nuts as a part of a coating for food, so you can grind them and use it as a breading for chicken cutlets or for fish. We have a great nut-crusted cod fillet where, rather than just simply putting a breadcrumb coating, we're using a little bit of breadcrumbs and then supplementing them with pistachios. Which are just so pretty and delicious, and making a really great breading for a piece of cod.
Let's go to Caroline, who joins us in Madison. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, I'm just calling to suggest that people start, instead of ignoring or just considering it a weed, to taste, just pick a leaf and taste the lamb's quarters. Which I believe is an amaranth. The seeds are good, too, I discovered since I learned about.
And how, Caroline, do you use them in recipes?
I just eat them when I find them. And I'm beginning to encourage them to grow, hopefully, in my yard and in the future. Add them. You can cook them like spinach and stuff, too, and
mm-hmm.
add them to lasagna or anything you add greens, either fresh or...
So kind of looking in the environment around you for what's growing around you, it sounds like, is what you're doing.
Yeah, especially lamb's quarters.
Mm.
I'd like to know more about them. I'm not online, so
okay.
I've got a lot to learn. But I do love them. I do love eating them. Even when I see them there, I wait for a rain, so to be sure they're clean before I start stuffing them in my mouth.
All right. Well, Jack, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I think there's this wide range of, things of we think of as weeds that are actually edible greens, and lamb's quarter is certainly one of them. Dandelion, perhaps more familiar, but is in the same family. And I think Caroline's exactly right here that if it's small and tender, you just put it in your salad, it adds additional flavor. When they get larger and tougher, you're going to want to cook them and think of them more like spinach that you're, some other leafy green that you're sautéing or braising, so that they're more tender. And so, mosh, lamb's quarter, dandelion, purslane—they're super nutritious greens that we don't eat enough of.
Well, let's move on to some of the sweeter items in the cookbook. There is a section on desserts. What can we use for sweetness without having to go to add so much sugar?
Yeah, I mean, partly this is thinking about, things that are naturally sweet. Can we swirl some pumpkin puree into a recipe, for instance? That said, you're going to have to use some sugar. I mean, you can't make a oatmeal cookie without sugar. And so our challenge here was to use less sugar and then to add more nutritious ingredients, so using lots of whole oats. But then let's add goji berries and chopped 70% dark chocolate in order to make extra nutrition when we're eating a oatmeal cookie. And no one should think that eating an oatmeal cookie is necessarily, that's not just going to be a staple in your diet, but we really wanted to be able to have desserts in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if you eat no dessert and say, well, I'm never going to eat dessert again, well, that doesn't really last for very long. So the notion was, let's eat better dessert. That not only tastes better and is appealing to all of our senses, but it's got some more nutritional value in it. And so, we tried to replace less healthy fats with more healthy fats, use either less sweetener or more natural types of sweeteners, and then look for nutrient-packed ingredients that we could add that might provide a surprise to someone who's eating that dish that's happy.
Let's. Can you walk us through the chocolate avocado pudding?
Sure. This is a great example of the test kitchen engineering a recipe to create an amazing creamy pudding. This is one case where your kids won't know there's avocado in it. We didn't invent this idea. There's some recipes out there on the internet. But a lot of the problems with them is that the avocados texture is kind of stringy. And so the first thing we did was we pureed the avocados for 2 minutes in the food processor, which is a very long time, to really break them down. The second thing is you really want a tremendous chocolate flavor. And cocoa powder turns out to be the best source of pure chocolate flavor because most of the fat has been removed from cocoa powder. And so we made a simple syrup with water, a little bit of sugar, and unsweetened cocoa powder along with some vanilla extract and instant espresso, and cooked those on the stovetop to basically make a hot cocoa syrup, which we then added to the food processor to continue to whip that avocado into a creamy puree. And then we finish it with just a small amount of melted 70% dark chocolate. Again, where this more fat coming from here and more of the sort of high chocolate notes. And it's just an amazing creamy pudding that does not have any source of dairy in it.
That's so brilliant.
You can't remove the sugar here. So, let's remember that it's got some sugar in it, but it's not pudding unless it's sweet. But it's got a healthier fat rather than lots of cream or half and half. We're using the avocado.
And we also posted that recipe on the Morning Show page at WPR.org. One of the superfoods that you mentioned in the book is dark chocolate. How can we use dark chocolate in our sweeter cooking?
Yeah, so by dark chocolate, and most nutritionists would argue that you need to really be looking for a chocolate that is 70% cacao. So that just indicates the amount of chocolate that's in a dark chocolate. The balance is basically sugar. So if you see a 60% cacao chocolate, that means it's roughly 40% sugar. So in order to maximize the nutrition from chocolate, you really want to be getting a dark chocolate. And at 70%, it's pretty, it'll be labeled probably bittersweet, and it's pretty bitter. But it's got, all of these really healthy properties from the plant, because remember, this is coming from a plant in the tropics, and that where chocolate can go off the rails is when, the candy bar chocolate that we grew up with as kids at Halloween probably has 60, 65% sugar, and so you're mostly eating sugar, is to really make sure you're maximizing the chocolate and minimizing the sugar, and then pairing it with other nutritious ingredients. We have a dried cherry chocolate and orange trail mix, where we've got dried cherries, again, super nutritious, along with some grated orange zest, pepitas, walnuts, raw almonds, and it's just a great snack that is, a great sort of replacement, perhaps, for that sweet thing you might have after dinner, is to have a handful of this crunchy, chewy chocolatey, delicious trail mix.
Sounds like it also would fit the bill if you have the munchies during the day as well.
It's a great, you know, afternoon snack, after school snack for kids, that, you know, mid-afternoon snack if you need a pick-me-up. And again, you're just eating all kinds of delicious, nutrient-rich ingredients, and you don't feel like you're dieting. You just feel like you're eating well.
Well, you said the D word here. In the next few days, we'll be turning over a new year. You know, a lot of people having a resolution to eat healthier. What advice would you offer someone starting fresh in the new year?
I think it's all about habits. And so when I see, you know, these crash programs, you know, somebody who's going to eat cabbage for 14 days straight, okay, maybe that's going to work for you, but then what are you going to do after the 14 days are over? And so it's about taking things that you currently do and substituting them with healthier behaviors. So, you know, if you're somebody who loves chocolate, for instance, try to buy a chocolate that has less sugar in it and more chocolate. You know, sort of replace things that are less healthy with things that are more healthy. And it's okay if it's a gradual change rather than a dramatic change, because that's probably more sustainable. And so it's, as I say, it's about habits and thinking about, are there habits that I have that I can make better?
And as you look through these recipes in Nutritious Delicious, are there any go-to tools in the kitchen that would be really helpful for us as we make more healthy recipes in the new year?
You know, I think, of course, you're going to be eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, so you'll want to make sure that you've got, a good vegetable peeler. That sort of goes without saying. A spiralizer might be nice. I think the food processor is probably the most useful, because you just use that for so many different things in the kitchen. And so, you know, if you didn't get a food processor as a gift for the holidays, that may be something to think about investing in the new year.
And what can we take away from this hour? If there's one thing that we can really do to change our kitchen or change what is in our refrigerator and on our counters, what would you say in terms of looking for superfoods?
Modest changes that are sustainable are really going to be much more successful than dramatic changes that are not. And the second thing I would say is to remember that you're eating with all of your senses. Mm. And to make food that is texturally and visually stimulating, as well as food that tastes good.
Well, Jack, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jack Bishop is Chief Creative Officer at America's Test Kitchen. Their newest cookbook is called Nutritious Delicious. Turbocharge your favorite recipes with 50 everyday superfoods. You can find several of the recipes from the cookbook over on the Morning Show page at WPR.org, including that super Cobb salad we talked about, Swiss chard mac and cheese, and chocolate avocado pudding, anyone? This hour of the Morning Show was produced by Brianne Chasso and Bill Martins. Dave Potras provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Supercharged Ideas Network. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we'll learn more about the beloved Laura Ingalls Wilder as we talk to the author of a new biography on the native Wisconsinite. That's tomorrow here on The Morning Show. Thanks for listening.